for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Howdy, howdy.
I'm Jamil Zainashev. We're here doing Brew Strong. My co-host, John Palmer.
Hey, everybody.
Kind of our encyclopedic beer brewing geeky guy.
Yes, don't get him started.
Yeah. Don't get John started, man. He may get excited, and we don't want that to happen. And today, sharing the studios with us in the guest house is my good friend Jason Petros.
How you doing?
Also known as JP.
That's
also
me.
And I'm not sure if you are the unicorn or the rainbow. I never quite figured that out.
I think I'm the rainbow. Well, actually, I don't know what you're talking about.
Right. Yeah. I thought I heard you referenced in the locker room as, you know, the unicorn. And, you know, yeah. I figured that was you.
Because I make people happy, I guess, is that what they're talking about.
I think it was just the eunuch part.
The eunuch. Yes.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, yeah. Jason, it's great to have you here. JP, great to have you here. And you the Sunday session also on the Brewing Network.
That's
and
right.
A show that shall remain nameless. You do that one, too. And,
thank you very much.
You do a whole bunch of stuff, and quite an accomplished brewer as well. So great to have you here in the studio with
us. Maybe not accomplished in the winner's circle, but you know, I think for drinkable beers
and getting
beers,
beer into bottles, yeah. Yes,
and beers that I like, I like to think I do.
I can get beer into a glass.
Pretty much,
I do good.
Yeah, very nice,
very nice, very nice beer.
Today. Yeah, you know, on the way in. I was flipping through my cell phone list of phone numbers, and
that's illegal now.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not.
Busted.
You can actually look through. You can do all that. You just can't hold it to your head and talk.
Oh, that's right.
So, I was flipping through, looking for your phone number. I was going to call you, John, and tell you where I was at, and we could chat before the show. But I came across Daniela's phone number in the list, and I was thinking, oh, Daniela, oh, yeah. And it reminded me of the time that Daniela, Justin, and I, we drove out to the GABF out in my old beater van, and we kind of took this little interesting tour. And the greatest thing about traveling with Justin and Daniela was that anytime there was a brew pub or something that we came across, we could stop there. There was nobody in the car saying, no, we can't be stopping. It was just like, oh, yeah, sure, well, let's stop and check it out. And it was just wonderful. It was absolutely one of the greatest road trips I've ever had, because I just loved, you know. And then when we stopped, it wasn't just me, you know, saying, let's check out these beers. It was everybody saying, all right, you know, well, let's see what we got here.
That must be nice.
Oh, it was fantastic. We decided to cut down through Utah and go to Arches National Monument or Park, whatever, which is absolutely beautiful. And we're on our way down there, and we're some little back road, and we see these big billboards. I mean, huge billboards for this brew pub that we'd never heard of before. And it's apparently not far off the freeway and coming up, and, you know, it's got, like, award-winning beer and all this. I'm like, hey, you know.
Sounds good.
I could use a pint, you know, no big deal.
Yeah.
And we keep seeing these signs, and finally we pull over, we find this place. Doesn't look too great, you know, a little kind of roadside shack out in the middle of nowhere. And we go in to have some beer, and there's a bunch of locals in there, and they kind of give us a look. Yeah, we walk up and we start ordering, you know, from their craft beer menu. I think I had a robust porter, and Justin, I'm not sure what he had, and maybe like a pale ale or a red or something like that. And Daniela got something, and when we ordered these things, it should have been a clue to us. I know that everyone in that place gave us a really weird look at that time. They're like, you know, they're all drinking really clear-looking beer.
Yeah.
We're ordering these things. And they look at us like, let's see what's going on. And come to pass, they were absolutely horrible. Absolutely horrible. And Justin talked to him a bit about what the, you know, where, you know, where the beer was coming from or whatever, and it was what'd they say, they were not brewing it anymore, or what was the deal?
Yeah, we asked, where do you brew this? Who brews? Oh, we don't brew it anymore. So our next question, of course, was, oh, so where does it come from?
Yeah.
Do you remember the answer?
Like a big truck brings it.
The answer was
something.
The answer was Budweiser.
Yeah.
They said, but, and so, no, we actually had to figure out. We went, wait, Budweiser? No, I've had their craft beer, and even that's not this bad.
Yeah.
So we figured out it was that the Budweiser truck comes, it's the distributor.
Yeah.
And it drops off this beer.
Right.
It's bad beer.
It was bad, and I'm not sure, you know, it was maybe that bad from the brewery, but maybe in that little pocket of Utah, the people don't drink anything other than, you know, the mass market lagers, and so maybe it stays hooked up for several months at a time until the billboards pull in some crazy straggler and, the beer rotting in the lines goes into the glass.
She tried to sell me her brew system.
Really?
The same woman, when we asked, they don't brew here anymore, she goes, but we got this brew system here in the back. You want to see it? It's for sale.
She sounded like Uncle Jesse from Dukes of Hazzard.
Yes. And we went and looked, and it was just, it was awful. Like, not even on discount would you want this thing. But she was really pushing it. Like, really? Because you could put it right in your van. It fit right there in the van.
It's bad.
Speaking of billboards, have you guys, I heard about the new Gordon Biersch billboard in the city.
No, I haven't.
It's Dan Gordon laying on his side, and I don't know if his shirt is off or not, but he's laying down a la Jameel pose for the More Beer catalog
a
few years ago.
Hey, he's copying my pose.
And he has a glass of beer or a bottle of beer, and he says, beer for beer drinkers who look like me. And Dan, he has a big gut.
He's a load.
It's great. What a great, you know, common denominator, man.
Yeah.
No hot chicks, no, you know, 20-year-old college kids with their hair all messed up. Just some big old dude.
Yeah, well, and at this place, again, no hot chicks and the lady behind the bar, you know, when I'm walking up and ordering this porter, you know, she kind of paused for a moment. She licked her tooth and then said, okay, you know.
Put it back in her pocket and said, all right.
All right. Yeah. But, you know, great fun times. And actually, everywhere else we stopped, I don't think we had a bad beer at all. I mean, we had some really good beers. I mean, we had a couple that were, you know, just good. And then we had some that were excellent.
Well, you went to Squatters, right?
Went to Squatters. We stopped in Reno to start with at Silver Peak. And did we end up stopping at Great Basin as well?
No. That was our second trip.
That was our second trip, yeah, where we had a really good time there, too. And then, Squatters.
Moab. When we went to Arches, we went to Moab Brewing Company. And that's the one that was really impressive to us because of the super low gravity beers, but so well done.
And the brewer was really kind, took good care of us there. I can't remember his name. But apparently he listened to Brewing Network stuff, so he knew who we were.
Good.
He didn't say that, but we spent the night there, a couple hours interviewing him. And then we all went home. And I went back in the next day because I forgot something. And the brewer comes up to me and says, hey, I didn't want to say anything. I didn't want to be that guy, but I'm a big fan of Jameel. I read all of his articles, and I listen to the show. And I didn't want to, like, be a big nerd, but can you just tell Jameel it was a real pleasure to meet him? You know? And here we were real stoked to meet this guy because he's a good brewer. He pulls me aside and says, just thank Jameel for me. He's a good dude.
Sweet. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think everybody we met was great. We met a brewer at Squatters. We met, you know, at Silver Peak. What was the one in Utah as well?
Uinta.
Uinta. They were nice as well. And, you know, everywhere we went, it was just fantastic. So I have really fond memories of that trip. And just all the things went with it. It was one of the great beer experiences for me. And I'll say, you know, it was the people. It was Justin and Daniela. It made it a real special trip for me. If I had done it by myself, it wouldn't have been nearly as wonderful. And most people would have just turned me away. But, you know, you whip out Daniela on the road, there you go. You know, everybody's like, hey, come on in. Well, enough of the idle chit-chat. Today, we are talking about attenuation. In preparation for the show, I flip through my emails, and if you have a question for Bruce Strong, you can email brewstrong at thebrewingnetwork.com, and all your questions will come in, and we'll consider them for future shows. And if it's something that seems like it needs an immediate answer, then John and I will jump on that and get you an answer, you know, fairly quick.
That's right.
But we take our show ideas and the shows that we put together from actual emails from people and the questions and concerns that you have about some of the aspects of brewing, technical and not so technical, but you know, how to make your brew better. How to become a better brewer, how to brew strong. That's what this show is about, and that's what we'll be covering in it.
That's right.
Man, many words.
Yes, well, you know.
But they're quality words.
You say it so well. Yeah, that's what can I do?
He just likes to agree with me. That's why he's the co-host, you
give,
see.
Give me another quarter.
All these other people.
Palmer's that guy in Run DMC who just says like every fourth word.
Right!
More brewing up. Beer!
Yeah, you know, see, you know, with Plissé, he would argue with me. I don't know. It's, you know, now I got the guy who agrees with me.
Can't buck the system.
There you go. You know, and all those troublemakers.
I'm going easy on you for now.
Although, yeah, you know.
Just feeling you out.
We hope to have Plissé here as our guest host as well, so it'd be great to have him. I love him. He's great. He does a great job. Yeah, today we're talking about attenuation, and actually got an even more impressive guest host than JP. Hard to imagine.
I can't even imagine.
We were able to get our good friend Chris White.
Oh, that's right.
Justin got him on the phone and asked him about attenuation. He asked him to define attenuation for us, right?
That's right.
Attenuation is the percentage of sugars or carbohydrates that yeast consume during fermentation. So if you had a starting gravity of 1050, 1.050, and it fermented down to 1.000, or 1, then that would be 100% attenuation, which you do get in most wines and red wines, but in beer, the carbohydrates are more complex. So the yeast do not consume all of the sugars. Some of the sugars are unfermentable, and you're left with some residual carbohydrates. So the final gravities in beer tend to be 1010 to 1015, and you have attenuation ranges that are generally 70 to 80%. So the actual percentage that individual fermentation goes to varies on a lot of factors. It depends on the way that the sugars are made available in the mashing. So a brewer that's doing a full grain, all grain beer has more control over the fermentable carbohydrates by the mash temperature. A lower mash temperature, you tend to have more fermentable carbohydrates. Higher mash temperature, you generally, since you inactivate the enzymes a little faster, you have more unfermentable sugars. So a brewer has a little bit of control there, and then each yeast strain has a different genetic code for metabolism that results in different levels of fermentability. For example, some yeast strains can ferment maltotriose better than others. That's 3 glucose units put together. Maltose is 2. So California ale yeast, for example, is drier, has more attenuation than English ale yeast in the same wort, because the California ale yeast is better at fermenting some of these more complex carbohydrates. So if you take the same wort, you use California ale yeast, you might get an attenuation of 70-75%, and English ale yeast, maybe 65-70%. So not more sweetness left in the beer. Usually these aren't sweet-tasting carbohydrates, but more body.
All right, so that's Chris White from White Labs. I neglected to mention that he's from White Labs, one of the finest producers of liquid brewing yeast cultures, and you know, they got a great array of products. Yeah, Chris is you know, a brilliant guy, and you know, as you can tell, he donates his time to help the homebrewers out. So I think that's really cool.
Yep, it's good to have him on. So his yeasts are available all over the world, so I imagine a lot of our audience is familiar with them.
Good stuff. All right, so when we come back from break, what we'll be doing is our resident beer encyclopedia here, John Palmer, will get into a more in-depth technical discussion of attenuation. We'll be right back.
Brew right. Brew smart.
Brew
Strong. This is Brew Strong. What's good for the earth, good for your body, and great for your brew? Organic ingredients. This October, the Organic Ingredient Experts, Seven Bridges Co-op in awesome Santa Cruz, California, hosts the second annual Organic Homebrew Challenge. All ingredients must be organic. Entries will be accepted September 1st through October 10th. Judging October 19th will be followed by an organic Oktoberfest for all participants, customers, and guests at Gordon Biersch Brewery and Restaurant in downtown San Jose, including a specially brewed Gordon Biersch Organic Beer. For more information, contest rules, and guidelines, visit breworganic.com/competition. And if you're looking for organic ingredients, Seven Bridges offers a huge selection of USDA certified kits and raw ingredients, from 8 ounces to 50 pound sacks of grain, whole and pellet hops, and all the equipment you'll need. Seven Bridges, the organic homebrew expert since 1997. Visit www.breworganic.com and enter the 2008 Organic Homebrew Challenge. What have you gotten out of a vial of White Labs yeast?
WLP-001, Cal Ale, baby!
23, Burton Ale.
008, East Coast Ale.
Cal Common, WLP-810.
It's gonna be WLP-400 with beer!
I got a sweet hoodie for my vial.
Huh?
White Labs, your source for great brewer's yeast, would like to invite all homebrewers to join the White Labs Customer Club. Redeem your empty vials for great White Labs merchandise and products. Free yeast, glassware, t-shirts, baseball caps, sweatshirts, polo shirts, and you won't believe what you'll get for 5,000 vials. Members also receive a newsletter packed with White Labs updates and facts, interviews with professional brewers, brew your own clone recipes, beercook.com recipes, and customer club stories. The White Labs Customer Club. Save your vials and get in the club. White Labs. It's all in the vial.
Did you know that every day a brewcaster goes to bed hungry? Did you know that that brewcaster is silently calling for the help of people just like you? Do you know that every day the unicorn and the rainbow have to blow sailors for loose change? For less than the cost of a half-calf, quad-shot, venti, extra-hot, soy milk, triple-pump, hazel, low-fat foam, double-cupped macchiato a day, you can help starving adults in Pacheco. Your love can be felt for as little as 7 cents a day. Visit thebrewingnetwork.com/donate to sign up today for as little as $2 a month. Private first class in the BN Army. Buy your way up the ranks as corporal, sergeant, ranger, or colonel with an easy-to-do monthly donation that keeps brewcasters alive and your favorite internet radio station broadcasting. No donation is too small to help those in need. Can't you find it in your heart to share your love with a brewcaster? In return, you will enjoy the wealth of knowledge that comes with every episode of The Session, The Jameel Show, and yes, even that other show. Thank you for listening, and please sign up for your donation at thebrewingnetwork.com/donate today.
This is www.thebrewingnetwork.com.
Sit down next to it, grab yourself a paper towel, and watch those yeast have sex.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Back to your hosts, Jameel Zainasheff and John Palmer. Putting the testicles in technical. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. And I know it shows my still wet behind the ears innocence, but I just love the production on all the Brewing Network stuff. It was of the highest quality.
Great. It's always good when someone with a deep, serious voice says testicles, and it's not your doctor. You know what I mean?
That's right. Or you don't feel that hand cupping you.
Yeah.
That's why I always have a female physician. So we were talking about.
Oh, yeah. I got another story related to that and a physical I had, but I don't want to get into that right now.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're talking about attenuation, and we just heard from Chris White kind of giving us a definition of attenuation, kind of highlighting some of the things that affect attenuation. So, John, you know, can you go a little bit more in depth as to what affects attenuation? What are the things that
the different factors might control?
Yeah, if I brew a batch of beer, what things can I do, or you know, what things should I be aware of that control attenuation?
Sure. Well, you know, I guess first off, we should differentiate between true attenuation and apparent attenuation. As brewers, we talk about apparent attenuation. It's and as Chris said, it's, you know, it's the OG minus the FG divided by the OG. You know, 1050 minus your final gravity, say 1010, and then divided by your OG. So if you went from 1050 to 1010, that's 40 divided by the original 50 comes out to 80%. And that's apparent attenuation. The true attenuation is less because alcohol has a lower gravity than water. And so if you get, you know, if you get really technical about it, then your true attenuation is different. But we you know, as brewers, we always talk about apparent attenuation. And you know, there's two ways to affect it. There's your brewing processes, you know, your grain bill, the gravity of the beer you're brewing, you know, the composition of the wort, the fermentability of the wort, and then there's the fermentation itself, where you get into you know, fermentation factors, your pitching rate, the nutrients that are available to the yeast, including oxygen and the oxygen levels that you have. So you know, there's a lot of different factors that we can use to influence the attenuation in our beers.
Well, you know, a lot of times, everybody, when they say attenuation, they're thinking, you know, how do I get my beer to ferment to a low enough final gravity?
Yeah, they want it dry.
There's a case, actually, I got a few emails from people saying, you know, my beer attenuates too much. You know, what's going on there? And so all these factors that you mentioned, they would apply as well to getting too low in attenuation when you want something with a lot of body left over, like a Scottish Light 60, where you don't want the thing to be ferment out to nothing and seem like water. Right?
That's right. That's right.
How about you, JP? Have you, you know, when you're brewing,
yeah,
do you normally hit, you know, have a predicted attenuation that you're reaching, or is it, you know, what tastes right to you, or what?
You know, honestly, I've never really paid attention to attenuation. I'm very much more concerned about the recipe formulation. For me, that's the fun part.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, drinking it, you know,
right.
But I've always done pretty well, you know, and I'm kind of one of those brewers that likes to pick his battles, and mm-hmm. I'm not worried so much if I finish at a 1014 and I should be about a 1012 or something like that.
Right.
I've just never done it for no real reason, because I did like looking at the recipe,
mm-hmm.
and every time I try to rebrew it to get a lower gravity, you know, I work around, you know, 60 plus grains or however many we have at the shop at Moorbeer, and I get sidetracked and I just brew something else entirely. So I've never really focused on that so much.
Right. You generally brew session beers though, right?
Yeah, I definitely do that, and I haven't had a problem to really to solve. I guess thinking about it is really my answer.
Well, and I think the part of the point you're making that I've made to a couple of people is, if the beer tastes good,
yeah,
who cares what the number is?
Right.
Right? Isn't that really what matters? Because sometimes, you know, the attenuation you get is really, and you know, if the beer tastes great and it attenuating a couple more points or a couple less points, you know, wouldn't make it better, then apparently you hit the right attenuation.
Yeah, I mean, rarely am I going to get, every once in a while I've gotten something that'll end in the low 20s or the high teens. It's just a mistake,
mm-hmm.
and it very rarely happens. It's not a repeatable issue for me,
mm-hmm.
so I'm not that overly concerned. I, you know, I guess I grew up right, as you know, you could say, whereas I had people teach me the right way the first time,
mm-hmm.
to really do stuff, and like a lot of guys, a lot of older brewers have learned four different ways since coming, you know, doing it the way that most people do it now.
Now, for your brewing, do you do mostly extract or mostly all grain brews?
Mostly all grain.
Okay, so you're controlling the fermentability of your wort in your brewing, and as you're brewing these session beers.
Yeah, I like a low mash temp.
Okay, and that accentuates the fermentability by, you know, mashing at lower temperatures,
mm-hmm.
close, you know, 145 up to 150, 152. you're accentuating the beta amylase, which produces maltose, the most fermentable sugar, mm-hmm. over the higher sugars like maltitriose, which Chris mentioned,
yeah,
and some of the higher dextrins also.
So that's probably why I haven't really had that much.
That's why you haven't had an issue, and okay. and that complements those style of beers.
Yeah.
All right. Before we get too deep into it, you know, I got a couple of questions that are kind of more of the basics here, and Don wrote in and he asked, how do you calculate final gravity from original gravity and attenuation percentages? He says, I should be able to figure this out, but I'm not feeling well at the moment. So,
okay. Well, that goes back to what I said earlier. The equation for apparent attenuation is your original gravity, like 1050, minus your final gravity, like 1010, divided by your original gravity again, 1050. So it's 50 minus 10, 40, divided by 50, and 40 over 50 is 80%. Or, you know, if you're looking at a yeast packet that says its apparent attenuation is 80% or 75%, then you can take that percentage and compare that to the original gravity of the beer that you intend to brew. And let's say you're brewing a 1040 or 1055 beer. Apply that 75% to, you know, 1050, and you'll get your final gravity estimate.
Well, and you know, one guy had a question about in the book. He said maybe I missed it somewhere in your book where you described it, but I noticed, and he's talking about Brewing Classic Styles, which is a book John and I wrote together. So I noticed in your recipes you have something abbreviated as ADF. And a percentage behind it. I've never seen that abbreviation. I'm not sure what it is. I'm assuming it has something to do with attenuation, but I'm not sure. Can you clarify what that stands for? And that stands for apparent degree of fermentation. You talked about the apparent degree of fermentation versus the real...
The true attenuation.
Which takes into account the alcohol, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which
the actual density of alcohol being lighter than water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, the true attenuation is always higher than the apparent attenuation.
And I got another email from Damon, and he was saying, one thing that's tripping me up is attenuation. Your ADF for your best bitter recipe is 73%, while it's 70% for your oatmeal stout recipe. The reason I noticed is because I'm planning on brewing the stout on top of the best bitter yeast cake when it is done. I also noticed in beer tools that the yeast strain gives a range of attenuation, not a specific number. Hmm. Okay, in the book, we give a specific number, and he's getting a range in beer tools and also on the Y-Yeast website, on the White Labs website, on Dan Starr's website. They all give a range of attenuation, right? He says, obviously, the attenuation is a primary determinant of the final gravity, so in order to hit the final gravity with accuracy, I need to strive for your appropriate ADF, which is different for each beer. So my question is, what is the primary determinant of the degree to which a yeast strain will attenuate within its range of attenuation? I'm going to guess it has something to do either with the temperature of the mash, 151 degrees versus 154 degrees, and or the temperature of the fermentation, although both of these recipes suggest shooting for 68 degrees Fahrenheit for fermentation. So what's the primary determinant on that?
Well, there's several. And one big difference between is the two styles of beer. We're talking oatmeal stout versus, you know, bitter. There are more unfermentables in the oatmeal stout grain bill.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
So recipe plays a big part. If you have
right.
a lot of crystal malt in there, crystal malt, especially the darker the crystal malt, tends not to attenuate quite as well, right? It won't ferment as well. Those sugars remain as they are throughout the process and don't ferment. So the more of that you put in there, it's not going to ferment.
That's
Same
right.
thing with a lot of other ingredients that you might have, right?
That's right. Yeah, you know. The numbers the yeast companies give out, I mean, that's based off a standard wort, you know,
right.
maybe like a pale malt only.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that's... But
standard wort, standard temperature, you know, it's
standard pitching
rates. Standard pitching rates, standard fermentation temperature. They keep all that the same.
Same phase of the moon.
And then they give you a range around that. And, you know, if you're making a beer with a higher original gravity... And, you know, attenuation is a certain percentage. The percentage can actually drop off in a beer with a higher starting
right.
gravity. When the alcohol gets past a certain point, generally about 5%, it's a lot rougher on the yeast.
Yeah, so you need to get the same apparent attenuation in a higher gravity beer that you do in a lower gravity beer, you would need to pitch more yeast.
Mm-hmm.
And you would need to make sure that you have optimum conditions for the fermentation of those yeast to really get that same number out, because it's going to be a less efficient process, you know, mm-hmm. with the much higher gravity, more stress on the yeast.
So those numbers, those percentages are, you think, like laboratory conditions? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, laboratory conditions and right. ballparks, mm-hmm. you know.
Against an average wort. Yeah. Because again, if you have a wort that's made more of maltose
above average
with a simpler sugar, less complex sugars, that should attenuate a bit more than something with a oh Jesus, John, was that a furball you're coughing up?
I thought that was biscuit.
Oh, well, it might have been a dog. She's laying down between
blame
behind
it on,
your chair.
So. Blame it on the dog.
Yes,
I blame everything on John. And if you have something with a lot of complex sugars, a higher mash temperature or an extract, this also affects extract brewers, right? Because the extract that you use, some of them will be made with more fermentable sugars. Some will be made with more complex sugars, like the Laglander extract is right. very well known as one that doesn't ferment very well because it has a lot of complex sugars in it, carbohydrates in it.
A lot of the European extracts like Laglander. You know, they were made to for kit and kilo brewers, made to be diluted with a couple pounds of sucrose, plain white table sugar. So they intentionally brewed them to a higher dextrin content so they wouldn't have as much fermentability, because they said, okay, people are going to mix this, with an additional 2 pounds of cane sugar, which ferments out completely, and that's going to bring the final gravity down. Whereas other extract manufacturers like Brees Malting, the extracts they put out, they brew them to, brew a 100% extract beer with no added sugar. So those extracts are brewed for good fermentability.
Hmm. Well, Mason, he emailed me and he said, hey, Pope, I'm having a problem with the fermentability of the liquid malt extract I'm getting, specifically the pills. I've never tried extracting enzymes before, but I'm going to try making the Dortmunder export from the book, and I was hoping for some tips to get most out of my process. Do I dissolve the LME in the 6 gallons of water, then steep some 2-row at 149 for the same amount of time? How long? I don't know. Also, I can no longer get Munich extract, so I was going to try and steep maybe 4 pounds of Munich grain to replace the 3 pounds of extract. And he says, so he's worried about the fermentability of his liquid malt extract. And he also goes on to say, I made a Roquefort 8 clone, OG at 1090, and it finished at 1044 with the pills extract. It was undrinkably sweet, cloying, a total waste. Here's the thing on that. It may not be the extract.
It may be process.
Yeah. Right. You have to make sure you're pitching enough healthy yeast, providing enough oxygen, and carefully keep the temperature while fermenting steady or warmer. This is the thing that I think a lot of people miss, is that when they're fermenting, they put their fermenter in some place that they believe will keep the beer cool. They don't want it to get too hot, you don't want a lot of hot alcohols, things like that. So they'll put it in some cool area of the home or the garage or the basement. And it'll tend to be cooler than the fermentation temperature. And the yeast get going, and it starts raging, and it gets hot, or they'll put it somewhere to keep it cool so it doesn't get out of control. Well, what happens is, overnight, the temperature tends to drop a little bit more, and it has more of a cooling effect. That can slow down the yeast, make the yeast start to drop out, or various factors like that. The swing in temperature can actually hurt your attenuation as well. It may be at the right temperature generally, but if you have a swing of several degrees, it's really going to wreak havoc on the yeast, and you're going to have trouble reaching your final attenuation. It's going to cause, especially towards the end of fermentation, when the yeast are just getting those last sugars in, if it gets cold overnight, they'll tend to just stop, flocculate, you're done.
And for brewers
up.
Too eager to bottle, 2 years to taste it, they may just bottle too soon. And, when it's not done, it could have used another week. So,
is there a way to maybe check, Mason, if he thinks it's his extract and he's brewing a Dortmunder a couple times and it's not coming out right, is there something he would do? Maybe just take a pound and dissolve it in water and put some dry yeast in there just to see how far it goes down and go, okay,
it's not the fermentation.
Forced fermentation. That's an excellent suggestion.
Yeah. Take a real fresh packet of dry yeast. Mm-hmm. And do like a 1 pound batch, a 1 gallon batch, and see how that extract ferments out.
All right, so we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll have more tips like that, like JP just came up with, on getting the right attenuation. We'll be back after this.
Keep your carboy cap on. This is Brew Strong. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Sean O'Sullivan, the brewmaster and co-founder of the 21st Amendment Brewery and Restaurant in San Francisco. 6 years ago, Nico Freccia and I opened the 21st Amendment on 2nd Street with the intent of bringing back the local neighborhood brew pub. Well, the neighborhood has really changed over the years, but the 21st Amendment still remains a great place for people to meet over a terrific meal and a tasty pint of beer. In the past, the only way you could enjoy the 21st Amendment's handcrafted beers was at the brew pub. Well, all that has changed. Now, the 21st Amendment beers are available in cans. That's right, cans. When was the last time you had a great beer in a can? Well, that day has come. We're offering our world-famous Watermelon Wheat and 21A IPA in cans. Cans are a better package than glass because cans keep the beer fresher longer, but you can also take cans to places where bottles can't go, like the beach, lake, golf courses, and sporting events. So join us in the revolution to take back the can from the big breweries and crack open a cold 21A craft beer in a can. The 21st Amendment, 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just two blocks from Giants Park.
Oh, crap! It's the hop shortage! He's in the basement!
Oh, please! My triple decocted Imperial Pilsner!
It's all gone. We'll never brew again.
Damn this hop shortage! Damn it to hell!
Was is los? Hop shortage?
Who are you guys?
Ich bin Doppelbock!
Ich bin Kölsch.
Und ich bin Münchener Helles.
We don't need a lot of hops to be delectable.
Now brew something malty!
Use less hops, brew more beer. Northern Brewer has kits and ingredients for dozens of worldwide beer styles that don't require a lot of hops to make a great pint, like the cool blonde Kolsch or the ponderously bottom-heavy Doppelbock. Keep drinking great beer. Order at northernbrewer.com and get flat rate $7.99 shipping anywhere in the contiguous U.S. One beer kit, $7.99 shipping. 1 million beer kits, $7.99 shipping.
Together we can beat this hop shortage.
Now get brewing!
Live. Beer Radio. The Brewing Network.
The Brewcasters.
If you're just starting, don't be discouraged by all this stuff. Exactly. It's so easy.
Just throw it together.
Dude. Put some sugar and some water and some yeast in there.
Yeah.
Brewing Network.
Like the Lance Armstrong of the beer world. Except for that nut thing. This is Brew Strong.
Oh, you gotta love it. You gotta love it, huh?
Yeah. And the Sheryl Crow thing.
Yeah. And the Sheryl Crow thing. Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's Sheryl Crow, you know.
And Kate Winslet, too. He was
dang.
He was
dang.
He was all over there for a little bit.
It might make the nut thing worthwhile.
Apparently.
Kate Hudson,
that's what it is. Yeah, Kate Hudson. So you got Tom Green doing Drew Barrymore. He has one nut. I think it is the one nut.
And then she dropped him for Justin Long. And then she broke up with Justin Long.
Wait a minute. I got to tell the story. I had this guy I worked with many years ago, got nut cancer, right? And so what they'll do is they'll put in a prosthesis, if you want.
Easy for you to say.
A fake nut, right?
Yeah.
They make it out of like some high-tech thing that probably 3M makes, you know? No, it's like a hard thing. And it's some sort of like, you know, like a billiard ball type of thing. And they put it in some high-tech plastic. And they obviously try and match up the sizes because, you know, you don't want one like a cantaloupe and one like a grape. Yeah. And he was telling me, he's like,
small?
he was telling me that it was great. You know, everything was fine. His health was back to normal and, he was okay on his testosterone and all this. He said, the one problem is, you know, you go in the hot tub, he says, you know, that thing would absorb an immense amount of heat. And then he says, afterwards, you'd be out, and like 15 minutes later, 20 minutes later, it's like, you know, you got this really hot nut going on.
A little hot potato there, huh?
It would just be one of the most annoying things, and you'd be very uncomfortable to have like one glowing hot 105-degree nut next to your regular body temperature nut. It's fine when the whole body's immersed, but you know, afterwards, it's a little bit concerning.
It's a little bit of an issue.
Yeah. I don't know what that has to do with attenuation. But that's what we're talking about today. We're talking about how...
Give me a couple of minutes, I'll come up with something.
Yeah, exactly.
There will be a link coming up here soon. But the thing is, you know, how... Attenuation is how much your beer ferments. And sometimes, you know, for a given recipe, you want more, you want a little less. It depends. And going back to that one email you had,
where he was talking about maybe adding his extract to a mini mash to try to get it more fermentable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that can be done.
Right.
And they make diastatic malt extracts
mm-hmm.
that allow you to do that.
Right. You could actually just get your extract, warm it up to a reasonable temperature, thin it out, and you can drop in some Beano or any other enzyme that'll break down those carbohydrates. Let that sit for a certain amount of time. I don't know what the amount of time is. I don't know what the dosage is because I haven't really experimented with that a lot. But you can do that. Let that sit for a little bit and then heat it up. It denatures the enzymes and that process stops. So you can actually control how much that'll happen. And you could do this with also just some extra grain. You could put a pound of, you know, just 2-row malt in there mm-hmm. and crush it up. You know, hold it at a given mash temperature, 150 degrees Fahrenheit, for half an hour or so, and it should, break down those remaining sugars. So
of course,
what's
key in doing that is hitting the mash temperatures
because mm-hmm.
you want to hit right around 150 mm-hmm. to accentuate the beta amylase.
Right.
Same with the Munich malt too. He mentioned Munich malt as uh-huh. one of the things he considered steeping. Well, steeping is one thing, you get flavors out, but if you want actual conversion and saccharification and enzymatic breakdown of these larger sugars into more fermentable sugars, then you got to be aware of that mash temperature.
Well, and I think that's an excellent point. I think it's very true. The thing I want to emphasize to the listeners is mash temperature isn't that critical as far as the overall picture goes. I mean, you know, if I was at 150 Fahrenheit, yeah. John, or if I was at 149 Fahrenheit or 151 Fahrenheit, if it was in side-by-side and everything else was so precisely controlled that there was no difference, I imagine that I could detect a difference between those beers
yeah.
in a blind
and
triangle.
And I'm talking about like 120 versus 180.
Right, right. But, you know, 150 versus 155 or 156, you're going to see a dramatic difference. But, you know, if you're off a degree or two, don't sweat it. Don't freak out. It'll mm-hmm. be okay. There's, you know, that's not a problem. The beer, like JP was saying, you know, It's not that critical if you're exactly at the right apparent attenuation. It's more important what the beer tastes like. And at the end, mm-hmm. it's going to be a subtle difference if you're a degree or two off in your mash temperature.
In our book, when you talk about the ADF or apparent attenuation, you're talking about that particular recipe when you brewed it with your yeast and your pitching rate, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's
right. And, you know, it's all those factors are in there. And I got a question from Tom. He emailed, he said, I've heard you mention now several times during your podcasts on matching your recipe to match attenuation. Could you explain that to me? Not sure about how going to achieve that. And his email, so I said, well, Tom, that's a big subject. I'm not going to answer it in email. generally, what you need to do is in recipe formulation, you're balancing the perception of sweet and bitter. Right, both in the main taste of the beer and in the finish. The big part of that attenuation of the beer is going to affect the amount and type of residual sugars. There are many factors in the final gravity, including the amount and type of specialty grains, mash temp, yeast strain, and you got to balance all those when you're making your recipe. When you choose a yeast, especially. And you see that one yeast has a range that seems to be a little more attenuative than another given strain that might have, you know, a similar flavor profile. People often ask, well, you know, why would I use one over the other? It's like, well, you know, if you need more attenuation, choose the one that attenuates a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because they're, you know, different strains.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, looking at your malt bill, if you can get, I guess if you're trying to build body, that's which is kind of the opposite of... going for attenuation, you can do it by your malt selection or you can do it by your yeast selection too.
So you're not going to be able to, you know, if you have a beer that you want to start at, you know, 1065 and you want it to finish at 1010, you're not going to use, like, English ale. Because it's pretty hard to get that high attenuation, right?
That's that's right. That's a low attenuating yeast strain, you know, 65, 72%. You're going to want something more like Cal Ale, which is, you know, closer to 80%.
Well, and Brad, he emailed me. He said, "Hey, Jay-Z, I've got two English ale yeasts on hand. The 1098 British Ale from Y Yeast and Nottingham Ale from White Labs. Could you suggest which styles work best with these yeasts?" And I answered him back. I said, "The 1098 attenuates well, so you'd want to find English styles that need that attenuation. Perhaps a barley wine or a bigger stout. Right?
That's right.
Or even a dry stout where you want it to dry out. Nottingham, that's somewhat middle of the road, and you can use that in a number of different English styles, you know, bitters, porters. But again, you want to look at your recipe, look at your original gravity and how much you want that to dry out to get the proper balance between your hops, your residual sugars, the rest of the malts, all those flavors going on, and, you know, what you want to achieve. When you're doing something like an Imperial IPA, you want that thing pretty dry, so you need a lot of attenuation, but it's a simple recipe. You're doing something like a barley wine, you want a fair amount of attenuation. You want to leave some behind.
That's right.
You know, some sugars behind in that, but a lot of that is achieved through the recipe, through the malts.
Mm-hmm.
So you could use the same yeast for American barley wine and Imperial IPA. One is going to finish probably 10 to 15 points drier, and it's based really on your recipe and, you know, your mash temperature or, you know, the extract that you're using.
Yeah, and maybe we should just emphasize that is White Labs Nottingham strain, as opposed, which is a liquid yeast, as opposed to Nottingham, the dry strain,
right,
from Danstar.
Danstar, right.
Right, which is actually a high attenuating yeast.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course you can use dry yeast for these as well. All right, here's one from Andrew in Australia. And John Palmer and I, we're going out to Australia.
Yes,
you guys are going.
We're going to be there for the National Australian Homebrewers Conference.
Great.
And we're both going to speak there and hang out and enjoy the hospitality of the our brothers down under.
I've been practicing.
Okay.
Good day, Sheila.
Good day, Sheila.
I've been eating shrimp off the barbecue, but apparently that has nothing to do with Australia.
And I've been watching a lot of down under beer commercials too on YouTube.
Right.
Big fan of Yahoo Serious.
I'm a big fan of Australian movies. I love Australian films.
Crocodile Dundee was great.
That was an Australian film. Yeah.
No,
yeah,
The Dish. That's one of my favorite movies.
I love Australian films. The Australian filmmakers have a sense of humor throughout everything, no matter how serious the movie, and just fantastic. He says, "Well, get back on the topic here. When I began all grain brewing, I experienced, like a lot of people, under attenuation in most of my beers.
Yeah.
Then I began making yeast starters and achieved better results, although still not ideal. I tried to combat the slight under attenuation. I dropped my mash temperatures from 67°C to 66°C and even tried 65.5°C. And then he, you know, increased the starters from there. He says, now the results I've been getting when repitching and nice big starters are fantastic in terms of the beer, but now I have a slight over-attenuation issue. Typically, I experience 80-plus degrees of attenuation with Y-Yeast 1056 and other strains, including Y-Yeast 2001 in my pills, including some results up to 84% attenuation.
Wow.
84%, that's high, right?
Yeah.
I feel it's less of an issue than under attenuation, but it's not optimal. In short, my question is whether or not these sorts of attenuation rates are actually possible with just my pitching rates, using your pitching rate calculator, or is it more likely I've just have my yeast dialed in and need to go back and consider my mash temperatures again? All right, and again, like we're saying, there's a lot of factors in there. You know, the amount of yeast you pitch, you know, the amount of oxygen you add, the temperature you ferment at, and the wort composition. Those are probably all the prime ones. pH of the wort makes a big difference. And when we talk about wort composition, it's not just the carbohydrates, but pH, because if your pH is off, you can end up with the yeast not fermenting very well with any of the
right.
The
I think it's really sugars. It's hard to over. You can't really overshoot with yeast factors. All you can do is. Practically is get as good as you can get in terms of attenuation with yeast pitching rate and yeast nutrition and temperature. So if he's getting 84%, I think we do need to look at brewing factors, recipe
mash
factors.
Temperature again.
Mash temperature, right. Recipe okay. factors, yeah.
And here's another one from Brad. He said, I have been plagued by low final gravities on my beers. I know this is not exactly a bad thing. They aren't turning out overly sweet and cloying. Again, if it tastes great, then don't worry about it. I would like to know why this is happening so I can adjust it when it does not suit the beer style. And here's the thing, he says, so I always get a 10-10 final gravity regardless of mash temperature. This is also regardless of style, he says. Regardless of recipe, he's always getting 10-10, which, I think they're all kind of, mid-range session beers. So, I got to question that. But he says, I just brewed a Scottish Ale, and he's talking to a wee heavy, and mashed at 160 degrees Fahrenheit, and he still got 10-10. He said, culprit, I think, is my mash tun. I'm brewing 5-gallon batches at 100-quart cooler. He thinks it's losing temperature too fast. And he says, on one hand, I'm getting good attenuation. On the other, everything's drying out too much. When he wants to make something like a barley wine or something like that, he's not getting enough residuals left over. The thing I told him was, I wonder if it couldn't be like a wild yeast. If he's getting the same wild yeast in all his beers environmentally, that could be a problem. So I told him, cap some up, keep it warm. And a lot of times people will drink stuff before these problems really out themselves.
That's right.
Hold on to a couple of bottles of this. Keep it warm on the counter in the 70 to 80 degree range for, a couple of months. If it gets even drier and it's dry and fizzy and gushing, it's a wild yeast problem. That's what's pulling down your final temperature there.
Yeah.
And so... what we're going to do, we're going to take another short break, and when we come back, we're going to get to questions from the chat room. We've got
Sounds
live listeners. They're ready to pick our brains, and we're ready to fill them in.
I'm ready.
We'll be back right after this.
Brew right. Brew smart. Brew strong. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, Push, the new brewery's looking good.
Thanks, Finn. Piece by piece.
Well, let's fire her up. Whoa! Is that a new kettle?
Yeah, just got it brand new, but paid half price.
What? And that blade scale?
40% off.
The new tap handle?
$5 instead of 13. Got a new regulator for the brew stand, too, but $5 instead of 25.
Dude, where are you stealing all this stuff from?
Where else? The more beer deal of the day.
Announcing the beer, and more beer deal of the day. Every day, a new fantastic deal from big items to small that will blow you away. Boil kettles, carboy carriers, sterile siphon starters, digital timers. Watch morebeer.com every day for a new deal, and you just might find the item you've been waiting for at a price you cannot believe. Hurry, because stock is limited on most items.
And that sweet Guinness cap, let me guess.
The more beer deal of the day.
Yeah, I knew it. Come on, let's brew something. Find the More Beer deal of the day at morebeer.com. Celebrity voices impersonated.
Attention homebrew shop owners. At Firm & Tap, they know you're tired of buying the same old gear that everyone else has. That's why Firm & Tap offers the newest and most cutting-edge brewing equipment known to man. Since 1998, Firm & Tap has been leading the fight against the boring and mundane by offering strange, unique, and just plain smart equipment. Like their stainless stone false bottoms. Never deal with the floating plastic hassle of other false bottoms again. And since they're made from stainless steel, they'll last a lifetime. Firm & Tap's line of copper wort chillers are the best on the market. Designed to cool your wort faster and more efficiently than other immersion chillers. They actually invented the equipment to make these chillers not only work great, but look great too. How about a fantastic line of ingredients, including vanilla beans, sorghum extract, blue agave extract, hot bitterness extract, unique wine yeast, green coffee beans, sake kits, all stuff you can't find anywhere else. Firm & Tap carries all the standard products and equipment you need as well, such as all grain systems, stainless hardware, kettles, carbonation zones, you name it, they've got it. Firm & Tap's entire line of products has been helping retail shops meet the demands of their customers for nearly 10 years, and they want to help you too. For more information, see them on the web at FirmandTap.com or call Jason at 1-800-942-2750. Firm & Tap, better beer through innovation.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew strong.
Can I tell you, I just love our new show.
I do too.
I'm so excited about this. I think it's great.
I want to do our drops over again for the other show after hearing all these good ideas.
It is now the best produced show on the BN.
still won't make that show.
I was thinking we just play all the drops and not even talk on it.
Yeah, there you go, over and over again.
Yeah,
just come up with all sorts of humorous ones.
Yeah,
know? Yeah. I'd like to do a bunch of classic radio ones. You know, The Shadow or Lone Ranger, Star Trek,
except for that nut thing. Yes,
yeah. Except for that nut thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, our next show coming up, if you're live listeners, stick with us, and you're going to get a show on wood age beers, and our own Jason Petros is a bit of an expert on that. And if you're listening on the archives, it's going to be about 2 weeks between shows.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you're hankering for a double dose of your rock candy, then you're going to get that on Only Live Listening. And so you want to check out thebrewingnetwork.com. That's when you'll see when they're going to be live. And you also don't forget to email brewstrong@thebrewingnetwork.com, and you can ask us questions there. You can even find I'm not sure if we still have any in the store, but you can get Brew Strong shirts in the Brewing Network store.
Sold out in 12 hours.
Oh!
Sold out in 12 hours, yeah. Oh, you know...
More on order already.
My buddy from Thunder Chicken Brewery out in Texas, he emailed me and said, I got my Brew Strong shirt! Ah!
Brew Very Strong cool. And right there, right at your coattails, were the shirts for that other show. Also sold. They sold out in 13 hours, I think.
Hopefully you guys won't have the same result in listenership.
Well, you know, I think
we're right behind you.
Well, I think the difference is when you have that other show, the people who are listening, they don't have like families or, you know, a home to live in that they have to
morals.
Pay for.
Yeah, what is it like so any rec hour in the yard?
Any
they
yeah,
can get
any,
out and listen.
Any income they have is completely disposable. So yeah,
well,
it doesn't really matter.
It's playing in the subways, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That homeless shelters.
Actually, I'm a big fan of the show. I listen all the time. Not that anybody thinks that's a good thing, but no, I love it. I think it's very entertaining. And if you don't know what we're talking about, tough luck.
Good,
I'm not going to worry about it.
I don't want to be accused or sued for steering you down the wrong path. All right, so we got a lot of people listening live, even though it was short notice. And
yeah.
Justin, we're getting a bunch of questions in from the listeners.
A lot of questions. People are excited about the show. First question, John Palmer, if a train leaves from Pacheco traveling... No, I'm kidding.
That's 120?
Just how, yeah, that's just how smart you are.
What's people the attenuation?
Yeah, what's its apparent attenuation?
6.
All right, good. No, a lot of questions. I think this is a common one you get. You certainly got it in some of your emails. If a beer finishes too high, what then? Is there something we can do to fix it? And you had mentioned a Beano process.
Right. Well, a couple of things. One is, if you're sure that the yeast cannot attenuate it down, if the sugars in there are a lot of complex sugars, you went overboard in your recipe and put in way too much crystal malt and all that, and the no yeast is going to eat it, then you would try and break it down with something like Beano. The problem with using Beano, after you've boiled the wort, is that it's going to keep going. It's not going to stop. You put Beano in there, it's going to keep going, quite a ways, and you may end up too dry.
It's an amylase type enzyme.
Right, so you want heat to denature it. So if you do this prior to the boil and experiment with that, when you boil it, it denatures those enzymes, and you've kind of locked in your fermentability of the wort. The thing that a lot of people in the past on the internet and homebrew lore was, oh, just throw more yeast in there, right? If you just throw more yeast into a beer that's already attenuated a good percentage of the way, it's got alcohol in it and the sugars are low and the remaining sugars are complex sugars, you're not going to do anything. It may get another point. What you need to do is make yourself a starter, even if you're using dry yeast. Normally, I don't recommend a starter with dry yeast, but whatever yeast you're doing, you're going to want to get it actively fermenting. You want to get it kind of, high croizen. You want the yeast raging and fermenting. And then you pour that whole thing into your beer, right? So a small start, it can be, with a tube of White Labs or a package of Y yeast, you could use a pint. You're not trying to grow yeast. You're not trying to...
You just want them active.
Get them active. Get them fermenting. Then dump that in. And the actively fermenting yeast will continue to eat other sugars that are in, are left behind in your beer. That's the way to do it. Don't just dump packages of yeast in. I've heard that, and that's horrible.
Now you have the option there of using the same yeast strain or using a different yeast strain that has a higher attenuation also. And Jennifer Talley told us a couple weeks back that if she has trouble, you know, if she has a beer that doesn't finish quite right, finishes too high, she pitches a lager yeast strain. And because lager yeast strains eat more of the maltitriose, the three sugar unit sugar,
I think
than ale yeast do.
Chris White was saying on his clip. Or, you know, Chris gave us a number of clips, and unfortunately, you know, we only have an hour, so we weren't able to play all of them. But, you know, Chris quite knowledgeable about the yeasts and attenuation and all that stuff.
And then maybe just to finish the same topic, a comment that was made in the forum is that somebody uses a pound of six row instead of Beano. And I didn't understand what he meant by that.
Well, you know, six row has more enzymes, but they're the same enzymes that are in two row.
Yeah, it's higher diastatic power per unit weight than two row.
Really not going to make a difference using six row or two row because it's the same enzymes. I guess if you're trying to do a large volume of liquid, then the six row might be more handy.
A little more bang for your buck.
But generally, otherwise, you know, the two row will do it. You could use any grain that has you know, the enzymatic power to convert itself. We'll pretty much do it.
Okay. And another listener in the chat room, going along with another email that you got, is having problems with too much attenuation. All of his beers are getting down to 10.08. He's used both Cal Ale and the London Ale yeast, IPAs, English Ales. Doesn't matter. They're all getting down to 10.08. He ferments at 65. He mashes at 154. His specific question is he mashing too low and providing too many fermentables? What do you think?
Well, I think a couple of things. Yeah. 154 on my equipment and my pitching rates and my yeast selection, my recipes, my oxygenation, all that stuff.
It's not that low.
It should be fine. That shouldn't be an issue. But you never know, you know, different systems, you know, don't be afraid to, he should kick it up, you know, 4 degrees Fahrenheit, 2 degrees C, or maybe, you know, 6 degrees Fahrenheit, 3 degrees C. Go ahead, kick it up to 160 and see what happens. Try a batch that way and see what happens. And that'll answer your question about mash temperature. More likely, there's also a possibility of, you know,
Thermometer problems,
or even other measurement problems. Maybe it's, you know, the hydrometer he's using. You know, that could be a possibility as well. Although it shouldn't always read the same. And then again, like we mentioned with the other person who wrote in, it could be that you know, you got a wild yeast in there and it's taking everything down to 10.08, and it's just the way it goes. And so the thing to do is, you know, see if you have any sort of contamination like that, or try, you know, re-sanitize and get rid of your plastic bits, try over, and just pay a great deal of attention to any possible routes for contamination.
Yeah, that's right. He might try, you know, leaving out a sample of that beer warm beyond bottling or beyond kegging and see if it goes lower. That's a good way of checking. You do a forced fermentation like we said earlier.
Absolutely.
I do believe he mentioned also that he is brewing on new equipment, so you might have been right off the bat there, that he needs to just adjust some of those temps. Okay, how about this question? How does pitching rate? You're always talking about a proper pitch, and you could pitch too much, you could pitch too little. How does this affect attenuation?
Well, you know, it's a number of factors in there, and the interesting thing about pitching rate is you can pitch too little, you can also pitch too much. And, you know, the thought is, well, you know, I'll just keep pitching more and more yeast, and I'll be able, it'll attenuate out, you know, appropriately. There's some truth to that, but there comes a point where if you pitch enough yeast, or, you know, way too much yeast, you can get to a point where attenuation will actually start to go back down.
Yeah, you'll overly stress the yeast. They don't have enough resources, you know, to support them.
Yeah, they become kind of lazy, or, you know, it just, and also depends on work composition. But, you know, if you are, the thing I recommend is go to www.mrmulti.com, plug for my site, and there's a free pitching rate calculator on there. And go ahead and use those numbers, and you know, start with those numbers. It may not be the exact number that you need for your brewing process and your recipes and all that, you know, going in the future. But start with that and try adjusting things like the amount of oxygen, fermentation temperatures, yeast strains, wort composition. You know, at least that kind of locks you into one, you know, locks down one of your parameters. You know, lock down your parameters and adjust just one and see what happens and see if you're getting better results or worse results. And once you've got that dialed in, you try another parameter. And, you know, if that doesn't get you, you know, get you in the range of where you want to be, then, you know, lock that parameter down at the best results you're getting and then start experimenting with another parameter. So, again, it's recipe, you know, the wort composition. Mm-hmm. It is, you know, your yeast strain, it's oxygen, it's pitching rates, it's fermentation temp, it's all those things. Even fermenter geometry and, you know, the depth of your fermenter is going to play a role in that as well.
Yeah. Let me offer this this thought, too, on pitching rates and oxygen. Generally, lower pitching rates are going to result in more esters than high pitching rates. High pitching rates...
And generally less attenuation.
And generally less attenuation, that's right. So as you increase the pitching rate, you're going to come up to, say, your optimum attenuation. If you overshoot that, you're probably not going to see it in your attenuation so much as you'll start seeing it in beer flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, our friend Chad's had some issues with. He's been, you know, pitching good starters and good oxygenation, good, but then he's had flavor problems.
Well, and the part of the problem was, you know, he was getting his oxygen for free. So, and I didn't realize this at first. He was getting a real hot alcohol, estery, nail polish kind of alcohol in his beers. And you know, the guy's process is wonderful, is flawless. The guy really knows what he's doing. He pays attention and makes some of the most beautiful beers. But he would get this hot alcohol thing in his lagers. And I'm like, you know, what's going on? You know, I'm like, I checked on all the other factors. And then, you know, it dawned on me, since he was supplying me with oxygen, that, oh, maybe he's using too much oxygen. Sure enough, he was using like 5 minutes at, you know, 10 liters.
Really,
he was really pumping it in there. And you wouldn't think you could use too much oxygen. But again, you trap oxygen in the headspace of the carboy and... you know, I always thought it's impossible to over-oxygenate, and then I realized maybe that's it. He backed off his oxygen, problem went away.
Yep.
And I've run into several other people who've experienced the exact same thing, and I tell them, hey, you know, back off on the oxygen, cut it down to, you know, give it a one-minute blast for, you know, at a half liter a minute, and see what happens.
Yeah.
And it tends to be enough, and it's amazing. Yeah, it gets rid of that.
All of your natural processes are—they're not linear. They're peaks. They go through an analog
curves.
Yeah, and so you can have too little, and you can have too much. You're trying to find the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely,
like you guys.
Yeah,
sweet spots.
We both have sweet spots. You want to kind of experiment later on, JP?
Wow.
See where they are at.
Huh? All right.
No comment.
Two more quick questions. One of them I have to ask, even if the guy in the chat room might just be messing with me. It's just something that I would do and let go for a long time.
Is it a record number of entries?
Grooming? Bathing?
He says that every beer he does, every single one, finishes at 10-10. Is that possible, or is his hydrometer busted? That's his question. Every single beer, 10-10.
Well, and that's again, I think that's the same thing.
He needs a deeper hydrometer jar.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
There you go. Yeah.
Right. I would do that for months before realizing.
Right, and it might be, it. You know, if you're doing a recipe like you're doing a English mild, and you're doing a American barley wine, and they're both finishing at 10-10, then something weird is going on.
Yeah.
You know, unless the recipe is the same. If start experimenting with the various factors, but again, you know, wild yeasts or, you know, environmental temperature factors, you're letting it get way cold overnight or, you know, something along those lines.
Okay.
You know, beers should not all finish at the same, you know, the same general type of beers could all finish around that.
Okay. But it'd be odd if everything you ever brewed finished at 10-10.
Yes.
Okay.
It'd be pretty cool, though.
Yeah.
You never have to worry.
One hell of a consistent brewer.
Yeah, that's a good guy.
I got
guy.
Consistency down, yeah.
Okay, and the final question of the day. What is your favorite Australian movie of all time, JC? Do you have one?
Oh, God. You know, there's so many great ones.
We have some Aussies in the chat room,
yeah,
so.
What was the one I just saw? Oh, God. And I was thinking about mentioning it, but I can't remember now. I don't know. You know, Welcome to Whoop Whoop.
Was it Priscilla, Queen of the Desert?
Priscilla, Queen of the Desert is excellent. I thought that was excellent. I really did.
Okay.
You know,
of course you do.
I watch them all. If I can get them here in the States, I watch them. I love them. They're really well done.
All right, that's it from the chat room. Take it away, fellas.
You don't want to know my
no.
my favorite?
Okay.
Yeah, I do.
I only speak for the chat, not
hey,
for ourselves.
You're waving that iPhone around the equipment. You're giving us noise. So put that away and pay attention. Jesus, I thought that only happened on the session. I know what you got to deal with.
I was looking up my favorite.
Give him the backhand? Is that what you want me to do?
I was looking at my favorite movie. Okay, I'm sorry.
Well, that's
mine's The Dish, in case anyone wondered.
And that was one where they did they were doing the radio telescope thing. Or
Apollo mission.
Yeah, that was excellent too. I love that one too. Yeah, Australian movies just wonderful.
You guys gonna knit a blanket later on and watch Australian movies or what?
Yeah, exactly. Cool. We're gonna spoon. Yeah. I get to be the big spoon. And other than that, we're gonna watch Australian movies. So let's kind of recap attenuation. Why don't you recap it for us today, John?
Okay, attenuation equals original gravity minus final gravity divided by original gravity, and it's the fermentation of the sugars, percentage of fermentations of the sugars in the wort.
Right, and
I'm done.
and the things to look out for, there you've got several factors that control it. Your wort composition,
right?
The amount of yeast you pitch, the strain of yeast you pitch, the oxygen that you provide or don't provide, and health of yeast makes a big factor as well, and temperature of fermentation, and even the depth of your fermenter as far as
although that doesn't tend to be as big a factor.
Tends to be minor.
Yeah.
But, that's, any back pressure you might have as well. So those are the factors to look out for, and, try adjusting them one at a time, and you should be able to get. Then look out for contamination, wild yeast, bacteria, things like that will draw down your attenuation much further.
Yeah. If you're noticing that if you leave a bottle out or, you save a sample of fermenting wort aside and it turns into club soda after a couple of weeks, then you've got a wild yeast problem.
Right, and I think the thing to do like that is do a test and see what kind of flavors you get after a certain amount of time. Or if the thing becomes gushing, then obviously you have a contamination issue going on there. All right, so don't forget, if you have questions for the Brew Strong Show, email brewstrong@thebrewingnetwork.com. And while you're there at thebrewingnetwork.com, check out the store. You can find a lot of books. You find signed books by John Palmer, signed books by myself as well, Jamal Zanishev, and cool T-shirts, Brew Strong, Brewing Network, the Hop Grenade. That's a very cool shirt and very popular. Join the crowd and have one of those, and click on various things around there, and you'll be amazed at what you find at the Brewing Network.
Just poke around,
yeah, and you'll find other great shows as well.
And I just wanted to mention, because a lot of people want to know, when is this show regularly going to be aired? You will find it every other Monday opposite the Jamil Show. So Mondays now belong to Jamil Zanishev, and every other one is Jamil Zanishev and John Palmer. You tune in Mondays at 7 p.m., and you're either going to find Brew Strong or an episode of the Jamil Show.
And you can't go wrong with either one. I'm proud of both efforts.
You should be.
And, of course, this show will be put into iTunes as a podcast or any other program that you use. A lot of people wondering if we're going to do that. Mm-hmm. And, yes, we will. It'll be just like all our other productions.
Yep. So. High quality. Good stuff. Brew Strong.
Brew Strong.